America, an America-based think tank, reports released last week, the Israeli regime has killed 232 journalists and media workers since its genocidal war in Gaza in early October 2023. Abu Bakr Abed joined us earlier with more details on the latest Israeli attacks against the devastated Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen.
Because the shelling hasn't stopped, the firing hasn't stopped. Even as I'm talking to you right now, the artillery shelling that I can hear from the eastern outskirts is absolutely horrendous and something that absolutely frightens the entire population in Deir el-Balah. And of course, there have been loads of attacks, airstrikes on Deir el-Balah, and the latest was in the southern areas on a family home that killed six people, including two women, and four men. And many injuries were also taken here to the hospital to receive a treatment. And overnight strikes have targeted Al-Aqsa Hospital, where three people were wounded and were receiving treatment here inside the hospital. And in another attack, which was in Al-Basra area in the central part, two people were killed, a husband and his wife, and their sons and children were also wounded. Now, if we talk about the southern areas, particularly the southernmost part of the strip, if we had a look at the evacuation orders. Now, the entire Rafah city is a buffer zone, so there is no zone for the population at the moment. All of Rafah is under the full Israeli control, and it's a buffer zone, so people do have a shrinking humanitarian zone, which is, of course, not a humanitarian and not safe zone at all, because Israel has been targeting very repeatedly over time.
The Palestinian Red Crescent Society has called for an independent international investigation into the targeted killing of 15 medics in Gaza.
We, as the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, call on the world first to form an independent and impartial international commission of inquiry. We have also asked this of the Security Council into the circumstances of the deliberate killing of ambulance crews and to hold those responsible for these flagrant violations of international humanitarian law accountable.
Speaking at a press conference in Ramallah, PRCS President Yunus Al-Khatib demanded punishment for Israeli crimes and said merely speaking of international law and the Geneva Convention is not sufficient. He also asked Israel to clarify the fate of the PRCS missing staff. Meanwhile, Germany has also called for an urgent inquiry into the attack, questioning the actions of the Israeli army. The March 23rd attack killed at least 15 Palestinian medics when Israeli forces knowingly opened fire on a convoy of ambulances in Rafah. Well, thousands of anti-Israel protesters in Turkey have thronged the streets of Istanbul, joining the growing wave of demonstrations worldwide against the regime's renewed onslaught against the Gaza Strip.
It is heavy for me to say these words, because we can only be spectators, unfortunately. Our prayers are with them. We have been boycotting for years individually. We are here. We are very much with them. However, now I want our state and Muslims to rise up on this issue. I want Israel to be told to stop militarily and to be put in their place.
Demonstrators waved Palestinian flags and held posters and banners in support of Palestine and Palestinian resistance groups. They also chanted anti-Israel slogans and called for an immediate end to the Israeli genocide in the besieged territory. The new rallies come amid a rise in global demonstrations against the resumption of Israel's onslaught after it shattered a two-month ceasefire with Hamas in mid-March. In the latest such protests in Morocco, thousands have marched the streets of the capital Rabat in solidarity with Palestinians in one of the country's largest demonstrations in months. Similar protests have also been held in Libya, Lebanon, Japan, and France. Israeli forces have intensified their incursions into the occupied West Bank, including Ramallah. Meanwhile, Palestinians have organized a general strike in response to the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. We were earlier joined by our correspondent, Aqal Hamad, for more details on the latest developments.
Since the hours of the morning, no economical situations, educational, health, everything over here has been closed to to send a clear message to oppose what's happening in the Palestinian territories in general, and specifically to Gaza Strip, what's happening to Gaza Strip, the unprecedented aggression, the crimes that are being committed. At 2 hours of the night, the IOF raided the entire Ramallah Providen, the most of the refugee camps over here, intensified attacks upon Al-Jalazon camp, Al-Amari camp, and to the north of the occupied Al-Quds, Qalandia and Shafat also were raided. And until minutes ago, the IOF started withdrawing from Ramallah and from those refugee camps, performing detainment operations, arresting many Palestinians, terrorizing families, and of course making incursions towards homes and houses, demolishing and destroying houses and properties.
Well, as the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza is raging, people in the occupied West Bank and occupied Al-Quds have held a general strike in support of Palestinian civilians in the besieged Strip. Here are some people calling for a united global stance against the ongoing aggression in Gaza.
Today in Hebron is a general strike in solidarity with Gaza. May God have mercy on our martyrs and release our prisoners, and may God be with them. Honestly, all the Arab people and the world should stand together as one. We see sights of children that are unspeakable. We can only say, God is sufficient for us, and He is the best disposer of affairs. People today continue, and God willing will continue with the strike because the situation is difficult. May God be with the people. Today is a strike in support of our brothers in Gaza. But do you think Israel will actually stop the siege on Gaza? May God be with Palestinians. All the Arab people are supporting Israel while Gaza is being annihilated, and no one cares.
The Israeli Prime Minister has arrived in the U.S. after his plane was made to travel a longer distance to avoid countries that might enforce the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant against him. According to media reports, the airplane carrying Netanyahu from Hungary to the U.S. flew 400 extra kilometers in distance. The regime fears that countries such as Ireland, Iceland, and the Netherlands might enforce the ICC mandate. Netanyahu was in Hungary on an official state visit after Budapest announced it would withdraw from the ICC and the Rome Statute. In November last year, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu and his former Minister of Military Affairs over the regime's war crimes in Gaza. Anti-Netanyahu protesters take to the streets in Al-Quds, calling on the Israeli Prime Minister to secure the release of captives held in Gaza. The protesters gathered outside the Israeli Premier's residence, slamming the regime's inability to secure their return of their captives, despite repeated promises. The demonstration came just hours before Prime Minister Netanyahu's scheduled meeting with former U.S. President Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. Public frustration is mounting as the Israeli regime faces deepening internal dissent and growing international scrutiny. Last month, Tel Aviv unilaterally ended the ceasefire agreement with Hamas, launching a brutal assault on Gaza after international attempts to extend the truce were rejected. An Israeli airstrike has killed at least one person in Lebanon as the regime continues to violate a fragile ceasefire with the Arab country. The Lebanese Health Ministry has said a man was killed after a regime airstrike targeted a village in the south of the country. This brings the number of Lebanese killed in Israeli attacks since the ceasefire to 84. Over the past 24 hours, the Israeli regime has attacked several villages in Lebanon's south, including Ziklin, Naoura, and Ait Shab. Since the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon came into effect in November 2024, Israel has repeatedly violated the deal. The regime has defied all calls to adhere to its obligations under the agreement, including the withdrawal of its forces from southern Lebanon. Mariam Saleh earlier joined us with an update from Lebanon. She says Israel is expanding its violations of the ceasefire that sought to stop its acts of aggression.
Yes, well, we have daily reports of these violations. This has become part of the Israeli systematic violation of the ceasefire and the violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Of course, we've had always a violation of Lebanon's sovereignty, even before the Al-Aqsa flood operation, where we witnessed overflights, even reaching the capital, Beirut, where we witnessed even violations in the land in various areas, especially in the borderline, and the continuous occupation of the Shabbat farms in Farshuba Hills. Now what we're looking at is basically what seems to be a continuation of the systematic targeting of Lebanon since the 8th of October, 2023. Now, here we're looking at what seems to be assassinations. However, today the targeting was against a civilian, a person who is a mechanic, motorcycle mechanic, and he was on his motorcycle as he was targeted by an Israeli drone in the town of Taibe on the main route, on the main highway, which leads to Odaisi. Of course, this is one of the areas that is considered not a forefront. It is not in the at the border. It is behind the border. But of course, the Israeli attacks have reached the capital, Beirut itself, and not only the areas in South Lebanon.
Residential areas in Yemen continue to be targeted by American warplanes as the United States presses ahead with its aggression against the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the country's capital city of Sana'a has been the focal point of fresh U.S. attacks. At least three airstrikes targeted al-Jabal al-Aswad area in Sana'a governance. The attacks left four civilians dead and over two dozen wounded, including women and children. American warplanes also launched four airstrikes on Kamaran Island in the governance of Hodeida in western Yemen. The northwestern Sa'ada governance was rocked with three strikes, while several air raids hit Hajja governance Abis district. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S. attacks are targeting civilian buildings, causing casualties among the civilian population. Well, Press TV has spoken to people in Yemen for their opinion about the American aggression on their country. Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
These are the goals of the criminal and liar Trump, who targets civilians and residential neighborhoods. Today in Shaab District, a citizen's home was bombed and several members of his family were killed, including women and children. What was bombed were not military sites, not missiles, and not launch pads. We say to the criminal Trump, this has been your pattern since the beginning of the aggression against our country and our people. All your targets are civilian and residential, but you will not deter us from our stance in support of Gaza, even if we are wiped off the face of the earth.
We were talking with Sheikh Saleh when suddenly we heard the first airstrike. I tried to run, but the second missile hit and exploded. That's when I heard Sheikh Saleh screaming, "My children are dead," and after that, I lost consciousness.
Iran's president has stressed again that the Islamic Republic doesn't want war. He said Tehran does favor negotiations, but not at any cost. Masoud Pezeshkian says Iran wants to negotiate, but the U.S. needs to prove that it truly intends to negotiate as well. He added that Washington cannot threaten Iran every day while calling for negotiations at the same time. Pezeshkian stressed that Iran will not submit to any humiliation. Meanwhile, Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Begai says the U.S. is yet to respond to Iran's proposal for indirect talks on its nuclear program and sanctions removal. Begai once again reiterated that Tehran will under no circumstances seek nuclear weapons as instructed by Islam. China has accused the U.S. of unilateralism and economic bullying as President Donald Trump's tariffs continue to spark global trade tensions.
The U.S. is practicing hegemony in the name of reciprocity. It sacrifices the legitimate interests of other countries to serve its own self-interests. Putting the U.S. first over international rules is a typical act of unilateralism, protectionism, and economic bullying.
Lin Jian added the U.S. tariffs seriously undermine the normal international economic and trade order and harm the security and stability of the global supply chain. The remarks come as Trump's sweeping tariffs have been sending ripples through global finance sector, with many major indices experiencing the sharpest decline in years. Beijing stock markets on Monday took a nosedive after China responded to the U.S. tariffs with more levies on U.S. imports. The German stock index DAX also slumped by around 10% at the start of trading. Meanwhile, France has urged the EU to consider, quote, extremely aggressive trade responses to Washington. Russia targets Ukrainian artillery and drone sites as clashes escalate across the front. Russia's defense ministry confirmed a strike on Ukraine's artillery base and drone facility using precision-guided weapons and UAVs. Russian forces also advanced, taking control of Basovka in the Sumy region in the east. In retaliation, Ukraine launched 7 attacks on Russian energy infrastructure, damaging power supply units and causing outages in multiple areas. Ukrainian forces say they repelled dozens of attacks in Lyman, Pokrovsk, and nearby fronts. Russia also intercepted 19 Ukrainian drones overnight over the Sea of Azov, others over Krasnodar, Bryansk, and Crimea. Mediated ceasefire discussions continue, but the two sides are far from any breakthrough so far. Well, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight. President Trump has demanded that France free its far-right politician Marine Le Pen and claimed that she is facing a witch hunt in France. Marine Le Pen has been banned from standing for the French presidency for 5 years. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered the story and tells us more. President Trump has demanded that France free its far-right leader Marine Le Pen, as he labeled her ban from running for office a witch hunt. Marine Le Pen was found guilty of embezzling European Union funds to pay party staff in a court ruling in Paris earlier this week. The National Rally leader, once a frontrunner in the polls for France's 2027 presidential election, has now been banned from standing for presidential elections, having been handed a 4-year prison sentence, 2 years of which will be served under house arrest and the other 2 suspended. Marine Le Pen denied all the charges against her. Taking to his social media platform, Truth Social, U.S. President Donald Trump described the court case as another example of European leftists using lawfare to silence free speech and censor their political opponent, this time going so far as to put that opponent in prison. The 56-year-old far-right leader of France, Marine Le Pen, the leader of France's National Rally Party, set up as the National Front by her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, in 1972, was also fined $100,000 by the court. Although the ban from public office begins immediately, the jail sentence and fine will only be confirmed once Le Pen has exhausted her appeals against the ruling. Earlier this week, Donald Trump compared himself to Marine Le Pen, describing her ban from holding public office in France as a very big deal and likening it to his own experience with the courts of law in the United States. French judge Bénédicte de Pertuis said Le Pen's actions had amounted to a serious and lasting attack on the rules of democratic life in Europe, but especially in France. Marine Le Pen stormed out of the court midway through the verdict on Monday. She was driven away from the courthouse before later taking part in a television interview in which she decried the court ruling as a political decision and claimed that the rule of law had been completely violated. Marine Le Pen is the latest in a series of European hardline politicians for whom Donald Trump has expressed support, including figures in Romania, Hungary, and Germany's far-right AfD party. The French national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has also covered the same story. U.S. President Donald Trump, his vice president J.D. Vance, and billionaire backer Elon Musk have all voiced their support for French far-right politician Marine Le Pen after she was found guilty of embezzlement and barred from running for public office in France, particularly the 2027 presidential election. Donald Trump, who often labeled his own legal woes as a leftist witch hunt, drew parallels with Marine Le Pen, the leader of France's far-right National Rally. Le Pen was widely seen as a plausible presidential winner. She was convicted last Monday of misappropriating European Union funds by using the money to pay party officials. She received a 4-year prison sentence, 2 of which are suspended, and 2 of which to be served under home detention. She also received a 100,000 euro fine. She also received an immediate 5-year ban on running for public office in France that will prevent her from running for the 2027 presidential election unless the court ruling is overturned next year. The witch hunt against Marine Le Pen is another example of European leftists using lawfare to silence free speech and censor their political opponents, Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform. He added, "It is the same playbook that was used against me." Donald Trump was indicted for covering up a hush money payment to a film star for attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 election that he lost and for retaining classified documents after he left the White House. He was convicted in the hush money case. He denied wrongdoing in all cases and has called them politically motivated. Federal charges against him were dropped following the 2024 election win. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, who has accused European nations of democratic abuses by seeking to block far-right parties from office, also weighed in to support Marine Le Pen. J.D. Vance, the U.S. Vice President, said, "The Europeans, they're absolutely 100% our friends, but that relationship, it's going to get stressed and it's going to get tested if they keep on trying to throw opposition leaders in jail." Speaking to Newsmax on Thursday, 3rd of April, J.D. Vance said, "Our relationship with Europe is going to get stressed." Meanwhile, Elon Musk, who has lent his support for far-right figures across Europe, reposted Donald Trump's message on his own ex social media platform, writing, "Free Marine Le Pen." The expressions of support for Le Pen by Washington's three most powerful figures underline a growing divergence between the United States and other nations, including many European nations, over how judges adjudicate thorny constitutional questions or wrongdoing by politicians. Marine Le Pen has accused France's judiciary of sparking a democratic crisis by barring her from the 2027 presidential election and called for a mass protest in Paris on Sunday, although there are signs her attacks on judges are playing badly with French voters. Having previously said she backed lifetime ineligibility for politicians convicted of misappropriations of public funds, she said in an interview with Le Parisien newspaper on Wednesday that the charges against her were different.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then send our heartfelt condolences to the Imam of our time and to each and every one of you as we gather on this day to mark the anniversary of the destruction of Jannatul Baqi, which we have called Yawmul Gham, the day of sadness. We pray to Allah Azza wa Jal that in our lifetime we once again see the lands of Baqi free, inshallah, and that we can go for the ziyarat of these great personalities with full freedom, inshallah. Just a bit of history. We talk about this every year, but it's a good reminder for each and every one of us about the day and why we mark it and why we commemorate it. The original destruction of Jannatul Baqi happened in the year 1806. In 1806, if we look at the timeline, the Saud family had already got in an alliance with Ibn Abdul Wahhab, and this is where the Wahhabi movement or the Wahhabi ideology stems from, that he was a man who lived in the 1700s. He was a Hanbali scholar, but he took many of his teachings from Ibn Taymiyyah, who we will talk about in a little bit. Ibn Taymiyyah, of course, was born in the 1200s, died in the early 1300s. So we're talking about a gap of 400 years between Ibn Taymiyyah and Abdul Wahhab. But the ideology and a lot of the aqidah that we see today in that area of Saudi Arabia was created by Abdul Wahhab in the sense that he took it from Ibn Taymiyyah. Not all, when you take an ideology from somebody, they picked and chose what ideology they wanted to follow. And so it wasn't an entire emulation the way we emulate, for example, a marja, and say they will accept his teachings and follow it. But we'll look at that tomorrow, inshallah. And so in 1805, Ibn Abdul Wahhab had already died by that time. He died in the late 1700s. But the ideology, what is now referred to as the Wahhabi ideology, had already taken root. And so in 1805, they conquered Medina and systematically destroyed the graves of Baqi. And then the Ottoman Empire once again rebuilt the graves of Baqi. And then in the year 1925, is once again under the rulership of King Ibn Saud now. And there's a nice article written on this subject. It's actually a book by Ayatollah Jafar Subhani. It's called Wahhabism. If anybody wants to understand the history of that ideology and the history, and not just the history of the ideology, but also some of their main tenets, that's a really good book to get an idea of how or what they practice and why they practice what they did. And so in the year 1925, they once again gained control and destroyed the graveside of Baqi. And this is the situation that we find ourselves in, and hence we commemorate this particular day. We said that this ideology came from Ibn Taymiyyah. Ibn Taymiyyah, we've talked a lot about him over the years as well. But it's important for us to understand, right? Ibn Taymiyyah, as I said, lived in 1265. I think he was born, and then he died in the early 1320s, around that time. And his approach to deen was a bit, I don't want to say harsh necessarily, right? But you have to look at the context with which Ibn Taymiyyah grew up in. Ibn Taymiyyah grew up, had to escape an area where the Mongols had attacked. It was the same time as other conflicts that were taking place. And so his defense of Islam, labeling people as heretic, labeling people as creating innovations, was quite profound in his teachings. And one of the steps that he took was that he prohibited the destruction or the visiting of graves. And then his student, Ibn al-Qayyim, went even a step further to say that one should never build upon a grave. So, for example, a fatwa that Ibn Taymiyyah gives is that worship should be performed only with obligatory or recommended actions. Therefore, if scholarly consensus is reached that traveling to graves is neither obligatory nor recommended, then when one does it as an act of worship, it is considered a form of bid'ah. And so you see the conclusion that he's drawing. I think a few years ago we had talked about the concept of ziyara in Shia Islam and Sunni Islam. It's titled The Etiquette of Ziyarat. But there's a particular hadith from the Prophet that says that one should only travel to three mosques, in Mecca, Medina, and Quds. And so from that, we have a similar tradition, but we understand it quite differently than they understand it. We understand it as these three mosques stand out. However, going to any other mosque is not prohibited, but it lacks the merit of, it is equal in merit, basically. He's saying don't go, because it's haram. But they've taken it to that where it says that there is no point to go because the Prophet has forbade it. And so it's a derivation of this. Obviously, we accept the fact that they didn't pull out these hadiths from thin air, or they didn't pull out these fatawa from thin air. But the way that they understand it and the way that we understand it is entirely different, right? And so hence our conclusions that we draw are different. But what's really interesting, right, and that this particular fatwa of him saying that it is a bid'ah to go and visit graves was rejected by the ijma of the Sunni scholars at his time. So we're talking about in the 1300s, right? He lived in the Levant area, which is maybe Damascus area. But his fatwa multiple times on different occasions were rejected, by the ijma of the sunnah, and because of his positions, he was jailed over 6 times during the course of his life. So the Sunnis themselves were jailing Ibn Taymiyyah because his fatwas were too left for them, or too right, however you want to describe it. And so after his death, and after the death of his student Ibn Qayyim, a bit after that, Ibn Taymiyyah's religious edicts were all but forgotten or abandoned. Right? And it was 400 years later that Abdul Wahhab re-earthed them, right? To bring about this ideology that he wanted, which would govern that particular, help govern that particular area as well. And so you find that for a period of 350 to 400 years, nobody agreed with Ibn Taymiyyah, right? And then today, Ibn Taymiyyah has become Shaykhul Islam, right? Because of the Wahhabi inclination towards them. What's interesting for us is that this concept of not visiting graves is something that in our fiqh, in our books, is completely not accepted, because we have so many traditions in our books that talk about the merits of ziyara, right? And so, for example, but again, these are our books, and when you get to polemics, when you get to the differences between Shia and Sunnis, we will never base our faith on their books, and they will never base their faith on our books. I think we have to accept that, right? But we have to also accept that we should have the freedom to practice the way we want to, and they can practice at the end of the day the way they want to. And we should be comfortable enough and solid enough in our faith to let then God judge us at the end of the day. Yeah? If we're not at that point of comfort to say, you know what, let God judge us, let's leave it, then our faith in itself is not strong enough, right? And so we would have to develop that. But we have many traditions. For example, our second Imam alayhi salam asks his grandfather Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, he says to him, "Ma jaza'u man zarak?" What is the reward of one who does your ziyarat? And so the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him and his family, replies, "Ya bunayya, man zarani hayyan wa mayyita." This is important. This is in our books, obviously, from Ilal al-Shara'i. He says, "Oh my son, one who visits me in my life or even after my death, O zara abaka, O zara akhaka, O zaraka, or visits your father, or visits your brother, or visits you, kana haqqan alayya an azurahu yawm al-qiyamah." Subhanallah. He says it becomes incumbent upon us to visit them on the Day of Judgment. Yeah? To aid, to go to the ziyarat of our Prophet, to go to the ziyarat of our A'imma alayhim as-salam, is something that in our understanding, in our fiqh, in our madhab, is highly, highly recommended. And we as believers need to be very comfortable with this concept.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen. We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight.
By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the sheer intensity of missile strikes and deadly bombings across the besieged Gaza Strip not only marked the settler colonial regime's continuation of the genocide of Palestinians, but also a decisive rejection of the ceasefire it had agreed to go. The child-murdering regime's criminal leadership, particularly Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the International Criminal Court's wanted list, has sought every pretext under the sun to resume massacring innocent civilians in Gaza. Despite the so-called lull during the first phase of the ceasefire, the Israeli regime had been itching to shed more Palestinian blood, adding to the tens of thousands of martyrs since October 7, 2023. Overnight, while displaced Palestinians subjected to the Zionist regime's inhumane blockade of food, fuel, medication, and other essentials, were preparing suhoor meals in makeshift plastic tents and bombed-out buildings during Ramadan, Netanyahu unleashed another wave of terror upon them. Within minutes, more than 400 civilians were killed, mainly women and children. Over 1,000 more were injured, with no means for medical treatment. Reports indicate that the current military strikes are deadlier and broader in scale than the ongoing drone attacks Gaza has suffered, while Netanyahu repeatedly violated the original ceasefire terms. In response to this aggression, the Gaza-based resistance movement, the Palestinian Resistance Movement of Hamas, condemned the Zionist regime for disregarding its obligations and overturning the truce agreement. Israel, which has repeatedly violated the ceasefire that took effect on January 19th, sought to fabricate new terms to justify blowing up the deal entirely. Journalist Jeremy Shill of Drop News and Abu Bakr Abed of Press TV noted that since January, Netanyahu had waged a campaign of sabotage and provocation, openly violating the agreement by obstructing and outright blocking aid deliveries into the Gaza Strip. Although food and other supplies were permitted during the first 42-day phase of the deal, the Zionist regime refused to allow nearly all 60,000 mobile homes and admitted only a fraction of the 200,000 tents into Gaza. While Netanyahu has attempted to blame Hamas with fabricated charges of undermining the ceasefire, the reality is that the Israeli regime imposed a total blockade on any aid, including food and medical supplies, to the Strip, and resumed its policy of using starvation as a weapon of war. Recently, the Israeli regime also cut off Gaza's electricity supply, forcing a major desalination plant to drastically reduce water output, severely limiting drinking water for 600,000 people in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. Hamas has remained committed to the agreement and was eager to maintain it, but Netanyahu, looking for a way out of his internal crisis, preferred to reignite the war at the expense of the blood of our people, Hamas stated. According to Haaretz, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani demanded immediate international action to force Israel to implement a ceasefire, abide by the agreement, and return to negotiations. That a key mediator is directing demands solely at Israel confirms that, contrary to Netanyahu's claims, Hamas has not violated the agreement. The other side has. This is further reinforced by media reports that families of Israeli captives in Gaza have denounced their own regime, not Hamas. Indeed, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs Itamar Ben-Gavir and Bezalel Smotrich not only welcomed the renewal of scorched-earth policies, but gleefully admitted the plans were prepared weeks ago. Ben-Gavir is now set to rejoin the cabinet. Their excitement over the slaughter of innocent mothers and babies reveals more than mere approval. It confirms that Israel never intended to honor the agreement and deliberately plotted to blame Hamas as a pretext for ongoing savagery in Gaza. Since the ceasefire began 60 days ago, the Palestinian resistance and rights organizations have meticulously tracked Israel's repeated violations, as reported by the Palestinian prisoner network Samedun. At the same time, in order to protect their people, the resistance has not once violated the ceasefire agreements nor retaliated against the Zionist war criminals. Izzat Ar-Reshir, a founding member of Hamas Political Bureau, reacted, stating, "The enemy will not achieve through war and destruction what it has failed to achieve through negotiations." Trump's greenlighting of Israel's bloodbath makes him directly culpable for a series of war crimes, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. Israeli activist Alon Mizrahi captured the devastation of this renewed genocide, immediately followed by harrowing images, as a tsunami of shock, disbelief, and pain. He put it in these words, quote, "Let's allow these feelings to crystallize into even a stronger resolution and conviction," unquote.
Thank you.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
For today, you will listen to the English translation of a part of the text of the message delivered by Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz, the start of the Iranian New Year on March 20th, 2025. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, O Transformer of hearts and sights, O Director of nights and days, O Transformer of situations and circumstances, transform our circumstances to the best of circumstances. The beginning of the new year this year coincides with the nights of Qadr and the martyrdom anniversary of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We are hopeful that the blessings of these nights and the attention of the Master of the Pious, Imam Ali alayhi salam, will encompass our dear people, our nation, our country, and all those whose new year begins with Nowruz. The year 1403, according to the Hijri Shamsi calendar, which started from March 20, 2024 and ended on March 20, 2025, was a year filled with numerous events. The events that unfolded one after another during this past year resembled those of 1981, and there were hardships and difficulties for our dear people. Early in the year, we mourned the martyrdom of the Iranian nation's beloved president, the late Mr. Ebrahim Raisi, may Allah bless his soul. This was preceded by the martyrdom of several of our advisors in Damascus. After all, various events took place in Tehran and later in Lebanon, resulting in the loss of valuable figures for both the Iranian nation and the Islamic Ummah. These were indeed bitter tragedies.
Subhanallah,
Furthermore, economic problems brought pressure on the people throughout the year, particularly in the latter half, and the difficulties involved in making a living created challenges for the population. These hardships existed throughout the past year. On the other hand, a tremendous extraordinary phenomenon took place, and that was the fact that the willpower of the Iranian people and their spiritual resilience, unity, and high level of preparedness were manifested. First, in the face of an event like the loss of the president, the massive turnout of the people for his funeral procession, the slogans they chanted, and the high morale they exhibited showed that although this was a serious tragedy, it wasn't able to make the Iranian people feel weakened. Furthermore, they were able to promptly hold elections within the legally designated time frame, elect a new president, form a government, and fill the gap in the country's administration. These matters are very significant and indicative of the high morale capabilities and spiritual strengths of the Iranian nation.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah,